guys, and the reason why I think it's good to have Terry and Tony do this is because I don't think anybody else here has a son that's 35 and a Christian. Maybe Snyder does, but he looks really good for his age. So, no, I just wanted to get some very fine wine perspectives here. These guys are about the most handsome 60-year-olds I could find in this place. And the 39, I'm sorry.
There's only 2 6-year-olds in it.
Yeah. No, but I know these guys pretty good, and I know the sons that they have, and I think that that's invaluable to have the practical side of guys who have been there and done that, and can share that with us. So, with that being said, number one, what do sons need most from their dads? So that's the question. Okay. So, what do you think from your experiences, sons need most from dad?
Okay. And this is recording. This is not to project or anything. One thing Jason has already pointed out is time. It's very important for sons to get from their dad. And as Jason already mentioned, the time could be quality time, or are you just sitting there doing your own thing, even though you think you're giving your time with your son? So the type of time you're giving them. And there's two types of instructions you can give your son: verbal instructions, nonverbal instructions. Both are very important. I think probably for me, the nonverbal instructions in how you are at home with your family, how you treat your wife, how are you involved in your local church, how are you when you're driving the car. Okay, so there's a lot of there's a lot of nonverbal instruction that you should be aware of. But
I think there's a couple things that were key in raising my four sons, and that's consistency in rules. I think our sons need that. And again, some of these things were touched on earlier. I think one of the other big things I remember this in terms of a phrase that was taught to me. It was like, "Dad, I can't hear a word you're saying because I'm too busy watching you live your life." And I think that's what boys need to see. Tony touched on it. The consistency in how they see us in all of those circumstances that Tony mentioned.
So, kids, would you rather have your dad gone all the time or home showing care and concern about you, giving you the time that you think you need or you need? So are the dads right? Would you rather have dad gone and not a part of your life, or with you and involved in your life?
Involved.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Involved. That was softball.
All right. Exactly, softball. So here, now we're going to flip it, okay? Because maybe this doesn't come out so much. We need something from you guys, too, so I wanted to ask them from a dad's perspective. What do you think we need from our kids?
Okay.
What do you think that's our relationship?
I think most dads want their kids. I know I wanted my sons to respect me. I think that was the number one thing that I wanted. And that covers a variety of areas in terms of how and why they would respect me. I didn't become a Christian until my oldest son was 13. I was 35. So what I wanted them to respect me for shifted greatly once I became a Christian. So that was a key thing for me in terms of what I wanted from my sons, was to see a change in my life and to respect that change and understand that dad's now operating from a different perspective in terms of why he does the things that he does. I'm not doing the things that I do now because of what the world says I should do, but I'm doing things now because I love Jesus and I want to live my life in a way that's going to honor and glorify him. So I wanted them to see that change and respect that change. That was the key thing for me.
Perfect. Just tried to add a little bit more. Terry said that very well. It would be nice, what dads need most from their son is help at home. There's some fathers here that have to travel, or there are some fathers here that it's not like the 9-to-5 job. They're maybe gone 8-10 hours a day. So it would be great for sons to help at home with their mom. And the biggest thing is if you have siblings. The father wants to see how siblings interact that are going to support each other, encourage each other. And I know I have a brother and three sisters myself, so I know how the siblings can get into each other a little bit with fights and here and that. But, you know, Lord willing, that is something to be aware of, that your father wants to come home and have a report from the mom that, hey, you know, things went well today.
You can keep it.
Oh, okay.
All right, question number three. So this one's a little bit more of a, might be a little bit more of a heavier question.
Okay, got it.
So, soapbox. As guys, I think, I don't know if this is a result of our sin nature, or it's just the way God kind of uniquely all wired us the same way, that sometimes it's hard for us to ask for help, to admit when we're wrong, or we want to take on everything. We want to be a problem solver, you know, like James, he wanted to open up a wall, I got that, right, and almost collapses the house, so he has to call Mark, so, right? Or, okay, how about, how many dads, when they buy something to put together, do you ever read the instructions? No. Why? We got it. Okay? So in that vein, what are some of the things dads can do to help create an environment to get their kids to open up? Because I know some of you guys think we're old, we don't get it, we don't know anything, and some of us think the word chill means cold still, right? Not cool. We need you guys to open up, so how can we help them?
Okay. All right, I start off with this one. This one is a tough one for me because I'm not real intentional. I was not really good at trying to have my sons open up. In other words, I waited for them to come to me, which is passive, instead of being more intentional and try to get something out of them. But you know, do as I say here and not as I do. But so you can encourage your sons to open up. You have to give time, of course. And hopefully, I think it would be very helpful if it's an isolated place away from other family members. I know even today, my wife reminds me, even though I've got sons that are in their, you know, 30s and whatnot, she still says, have one-on-one time with them. Be a good listener, not always thinking that what you hear from your son, you have to respond to it or try to fix it. Sometimes it's just listening. You could give examples of maybe some mistakes you made in the past. I mean, not everything I know, but something that they could say, hey, you know, my dad wasn't perfect. And try to ask questions that are just not yes, no questions, like, did you have a good day today? Well, that's going to be a simple what? Yes or no? No or no? Instead of, yeah, I don't know. Instead of, all right, what happened today at school? Okay, those are going to be questions. Yeah, right. But it's a challenge again. But these are types of things you can do to open up.
Yeah, I think dads especially, you need to put things on your calendar. Because if we don't, we can have the intentionality of wanting to spend time, quality time, quantity time, whatever, however you want to put it out there. But if it doesn't go on your calendar, you're probably not going to do it. And I think we have a family calendar at home, and I have, you know, my work calendar. But things that my wife and I do with our kids, they're on the family calendar. So I think that's one of the things that our boys want to see in us, is that commitment. You know, so if I say I'm taking my oldest son Matthew to lunch on Thursday, I've got it on my calendar so I don't schedule an appointment with a client on Thursday at lunchtime. Nothing sends a negative message to your son like, hey, I know we have this time set aside, but I can't make it because. So you got to try to honor that commitment once you make it. I think that's a huge thing. Tony.
I got to try to do that. That's good. Thank you, Terry.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but Molly and I got in the habit of doing that with our kids when they were young, just because we were busy, and everybody's busy. So it got on the calendar. And even today, like with your sons, they talk about those times we went to the shark club and shot pool and had a burger. You know, or she would take them to the Coney Island, right? And they would have a chili dog together and some chili cheese fries. But they looked forward to that day every week. And we rotated that, you know, through with the different boys, but we started it. We did that for probably 15 years. We spent that quality time with them. Another thing I want to mention, too, is we talk a lot about quality time, but if it's only, you know, to use an example, if it's only 1 hour out of every 24, you're going to miss a lot. You can't artificially create those spontaneous moments where you have a chance to experience something together by only scheduling a finite amount of time with your son. You've got to have some quantity time in order to be there for that quality moment, right? So putting your son's life on your calendar for 1 hour a month isn't going to cut it. Right, and then I think tying into what Tony said, asking better questions. Sometimes the questions that we ask reveal the interest that we have. If we just want to get that yes-no answer, we're going to ask yes-no questions. One of the things that we did that helps is we spent an hour at the dinner table every night. And when I was coaching, I coached my boys on and off for about 15 years. We'd get home from a varsity high school practice at 8:30. We gathered for dinner at 8:30. Molly would give the other boys a snack to buy them over. They'd do their homework. But when I came home with the older boys, we had family dinner, and it was an hour. And we made everybody stay at the table. You had to ask for permission to get away from the table. And again, that's something that they enjoyed. Sometimes it was a lot of work, especially if you got younger sons. They don't have a very long attention span. But over time, they came to look forward to that dinner hour, and they're now modeling that with their families.
Some dangers that you can tell us about your kids ignoring your teaching and wisdom?
Well, you know, Jason touched on this, and you guys all know this. The boys here, you know your brothers are all, and your siblings are all different than you are. And the behavior of my sons, you know, it's hard to believe that all four of them came from the same mom and dad. You know, they're so different in terms of what they did behaviorally, and you know how they experienced interacting with Molly and I in terms of developing their faith, that it's hard to say if there's, you know, just one or two things. But we don't want to provoke our kids to rebellion by clamping down too hard on them. So that we know the negative prescriptive things that we do to try to set parameters for them. So I would say this to What helped with us was the idea of catching our boys doing things right, right? Reinforcing the right behavior, having consequences for the negative behavior, but that wasn't the only interaction we had. And I think that's really important for you guys as dads. I know our sons crave our positive statements about them. They live for that. It doesn't seem like it all of the time when they're driving you crazy. For you young men, I know that you're disappointed sometimes in your dad when you do something right and the first thing out of my mouth was critical. You just wanted to be celebrated for doing something right. That's why you would come to your dad. That's why my boys would come to me. And I wasn't always in a good mood. You know, I wasn't always happy because I remembered the thing you did two days ago that I was still stewing over. So when you came with me with that good thing, I didn't hear that. It was just an opportunity for me to unload on you for what you did 2 days ago. Right? But you know, we're human beings as well. So, guys, be patient with your dads. They're, you know, they've got their own lives. They've got their own things that are going on and causing pressure for them, just like you do. You do, but we all need to do a better job of catching the one that we love doing things right and reinforcing that positive behavior. When you talk about don't exacerbate your son. You know, don't encourage rebellion by being harsh. right? Sometimes that act of rebellion is just a response of being hurt by the person you were looking to for affirmation. But dads, we sometimes get too busy and are carrying too much baggage to see that and to take advantage of that time to draw closer together.
Okay. First little note here, of course, dangers for ignoring dad's teaching is his disobedience to God. But and then Terry gave great examples of the ramifications of that. So if you're not listening to your dad, most likely you're not listening to your teacher at school. You're not listening to your mom. Probably disrespect to any authority figure that you come in contact with. So there's those ramifications will carry over in other relationships that you have in the world. So.
Yeah, this just came to mind. But one of my older sons, when he was 22, my youngest son, he was not a Christian. And one night we had had a difficult evening together and talking about life. And he looked at me and he said, Dad, do you think I'm born again? And he had gone to Plymouth Christian. He knew all the terms. And he knew, you know, he could talk about his faith. But he asked me that question. And I had to answer him saying, no, I don't think you're born again. But I wanted to give him hope. And again, he knew the context. He knew the conversation. And I'm sharing this with you because I know some of you guys are not born again that are here today. So I want to give you a hopeful message. But I looked him in the eyes and he said, why not? And I said to him, because I don't see any fruit. And he had a girlfriend. I said, you know how you feel about Amy. You want to be with her all the time. You want to know about her intimately. You want to share things with her. When I see that in your life in terms of your relationship with Jesus, then I could look at you, son, and say, yeah, I see some fruit. I don't know your heart, but I can see your fruit. And I can tell you that, yes, I think you are born again based on what I see. But to give him hope, I said to my son, I said, look, you may not be born again, but that doesn't mean you're not elect. And I shared with him my story, reminded him of my story. I was 35 before I was born again, but I was elect before the foundations of the earth were formed. So I needed to give him that hope that just because he wasn't born again at 22 didn't mean he wouldn't be born again sometime in the future. That's God's sovereignty in that plan of election. So there's a time when we can be candid with our sons, you know, and not sugarcoat their behavior and give them a false sense of hope, right? But we can give them a real sense of hope in God's sovereignty. And the promise that he gives us as Christian fathers that we can have a sanctifying effect on our sons, even when they're not born again, we can still be a positive influence on them, praying all the time for their salvation and looking forward to that with a hope that God will be good to us as fathers, as Christian fathers, as we pray for our sons' salvation, but relying on God's sovereignty.
I guess from what Jason had said earlier, I'd have to ask myself, did I provoke him to this type of response, number one. Number two, if it is a sinful behavior, I would have to act upon it. I'd have to have, there'd be consequences, there'd be discipline. If there isn't any discipline, then I'm sitting right there as a father, not doing my responsible or my job. I know one thing that I feel for you guys is the use of electronic devices that really weren't there for most of my kids' upbringing. I mean, they did up when they got in high school, but still. So I want the sons to hear that those electronic devices are not yours. And I hope the fathers monitor that, whatever. You could be the nicest guy in the world. You should be held accountable on what you're doing on those devices. And it is just something that I know concerns for my grandchildren and whatnot, that they have exposure to these types of devices. But anyway, that's going off a little bit on a tangent. But
no, it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had, you know, four sons. The first two came down the pipe and had, you know, ideal lives. And we just kind of sailed through. They were married and having kids. Their faith we knew was their own because they were out of the house and they were still desiring the things of God. The second two boys kind of answered that question we asked when they were 8 or 9 is, God, is this just too good to be true? Our boys, are all four of our boys, they're just, you know, they were ideal young kids. Well, the other shoe dropped on the second two. There was abuse, there was of alcohol and drugs, there was depression. And these were years where they were 19 to 22, 23. And there were months back and forth where either I wanted to kick them out of the house or my wife wanted to kick them out of the house, and we had to talk each other down. And at the heart of that fluctuation, you know, there's the real frustration and anger that you feel as a dad. But there's also the acknowledgement and recollection of the grace that God gives us way more than we deserve. And what he forgives me every day is nothing compared to, well, is everything compared to the sin and disappointment we saw in our sons' lives. So from a dad's perspective, what we had to remember is when Peter asked Jesus, how many times do I forgive that guy that's been bothering me? 9 times, because that was the law. And Jesus answers back. Do you remember the answer?
7 times 70.
Hyperbole, saying, you've got to forgive him. And that saved our relationship with our two boys, that before we kicked them out on the street, which would have, I think, just brought disaster to their lives, God's grace, remembering God's grace in our lives, helped us extend grace, a kind of a supernatural grace. It was really tough. There were some really tough things that happened between those last two boys and my wife and I. But it was God's grace, remembering what he did for me and when she was thinking about it, what he did for her, allowed us to have the grace to stay in relationship with our sons. And through that steadfastness, we modeled Christ's commitment to his children because of our commitment to them. And now we've had reconciliation. The one son is married to a Christian woman. The other's engaged to a Christian woman. And we see their faith becoming their own faith. And so it was a wonderful thing to look back in hindsight, but it was really tough for those few years that we struggled with that. So just remembering God's grace as dads, when you get down into the deep weeds and you think that there's nothing left but judgment for your son, remember how forbearing God is towards us. That helps go a long way.
Some examples of the power of forgiveness that took place in your relationships with your sons.
You go ahead. I think I just did that.
The power of forgiveness. I think is when I mess up, how I interacted with my wife or whatever, and making sure I ask for forgiveness in front of my children if it happened in front of them. And that to me has probably been the hardest part for me to follow through, because I got this image of I want to be the best dad or whatever. And so if you can show that action of forgiveness when you mess up, then when you go to correct them, and they have something that will. I'm sorry, did you say?
Humility.
Oh, humility. Yep.
Humility.
Yep. So that's. And Terry already went through a great example there.
Okay. Good. Okay, two more, and then we'll start back up. So, what words of wisdom can you share about Satan trying to deceive or tear apart?
Yeah, we have to remember Satan's on the outside, but we still have that sinful heart on the inside. So we got two things going against us, that it could be your own thoughts coming from your sinful way, or whether it be externally from Satan, but stuff like, oh, you don't have to listen to your dad. For those of you that are in a school system, you're going to get a lot of probably bad information. I'm sure there's going to be good kids you hang around with, but there'll be some kids that you might get some real bad information about. Oh, you don't have to listen to your dad or your parents. That's so not cool. Those are the kind of attacks that you will get. And for the dad, work for me, probably work has been something, I got to do this, or work's constantly that challenge of pulling you away from possibly giving time more for your kids or family. I know for me there was a time when I came to the Lord at 30, and my wife and I right away said, oh, we got to put our kids into Christian school. Well, that's a good idea, but that was expensive. Oh, that's all right. I'm going to do two jobs, which I did. But it took a lot of energy out of me, and I look back at those times, and I wish I would have done things differently. But
Would you read the question one more time, Jason?
Yeah. Some examples of how Satan tries to rip apart or deceive mm-hmm. in the relationship.
Okay. Yeah. I think, as a dad, it's easy for Satan to, throw those darts at us when we don't interact with our kids, talking about our relationship with our sons. It's easy for him to call us out on that. And, of course, he wants to make us feel that if we really were a Christian dad, how could we possibly react that way? How could we feel that way about our sons? But I'm encouraged by in Luke, where on the night of the Last Supper, where Jesus is with Peter, and Peter's saying, hey, I'm going to do all of these things. And Jesus says, Peter, Satan wants to sift you like wheat, right? He's like a roaring lion. He's coming after you. And you're not going to be able to do these things that you say you're going to do. But what does Jesus say to Peter that's different than what he said to Judas? He said, but I will pray for you. I will pray for you so that when you're restored, you can feed my sheep, you can lead my people. And you remember that story. So there is that inevitable questioning that the accuser of our souls is going to throw our way. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. But we need to remember the Word of God. Remember in our armor in the armor of God, the offensive weapon is what?
Sword.
The sword. And what's the sword? The Word of God. We need to remember the Word of God when we're tempted like that. We know it's coming from Satan. But if we don't have the full armor of God, and if we especially don't have the sword as the offensive weapon, we're going to fall in. We're going to be influenced by that, right? He's going to pierce that armor, and he's going to influence us. So we have to remember the armor of God. I think that's the key thing.
The last one, and now when we start getting this deep, we're probably answering with content that we could answer for multiple questions. But the last one I wanted was just like a testimony of something extraordinary that Christ has done within your relationships.
With our sons? Or?
With your sons. Yeah.
Well, at the end of the day, especially where I am now, yeah. with our boys being grown men, it's remembering and celebrating the gift of children. And even through all of the ups and downs, the joys and the heartbreaks of being a father, dealing with the mistakes that we made as we raised our kids, celebrating with them those wonderful moments that we were there to share with them. Looking back on it, that old saying, we get insight into how God works in our lives through hindsight. And so where I am today, I can look back and see how he fulfilled his promises to make our children that jewel in our married lives, in our families. But it's come at a cost. There's parts of my body strewn along that lifeline. I had a lot more hair and a lot less wrinkles when I first got married. So there's that joy that we experience now, or that I experience now, looking back on the time I've had those boys and having the honor of being their father, that it makes it all worthwhile. It makes it all worthwhile. And seeing you men sitting here with your sons, I know you guys are all going through different things, celebrating, agonizing over different things. Boys, you're frustrated with your dads 1 minute and loving them the next minute. But that's life. not a fairy tale. That's the real deal. So we need to rely on the goodness of God when we think about our relationships with our dads, and when we as dads think about our relationship with our sons. That's what we need to rely on. It's His goodness. Remember, all things work together for the good, right? And that's all things is all things, the good and the bad. All things are working together for our good as dads and your good as sons. That's an important promise to remember.
Very well said, Terry. One thing when I read that question is, as I told you, I came to the Lord at 30. So when I went through my teens and I went through my 20s, I did as the world told me to do. And there I can look back and say there's the first time that I really experienced the grace of God, that something terrible did not happen. And so what it's been a blessing to me to see is raising my family to fear the Lord, they have been prevented that environment that I went in through in my teens and 20s. And so I just can encourage you to love your sons, give them time. Yes, they're going to make mistakes, but with God's grace, just like with me in my teens and 20s, he will care for them. He'll oversee them. Pray, pray, pray.
As dads, we shouldn't criticize or compare our sons into the man we want them to be, right? And two, for the kids, don't close yourself off and expect that your dad's going to change, or don't wait for your dad to change before you change, right? So I'm going to stay quiet, not say anything, and I'm going to rebel through my actions of disobedience, not listening, disrespect, whatever. If you want something to change, you have to be willing to change it. Just come out and say, Dad, I'm so disappointed in this. Or when you do that, it kills me. It's a lot easier just to get it off the table. It takes courage. You deal with it. Not stay quiet about it for years and hope that your dad's going to change. Because if he doesn't know, then he can't change. So, I can't be any more direct than that, but it's true. Just a lot of things to consider. But like you said, Tony, I think pray, pray, pray. God's good. He will work things out for good. So be it that we're pursuing godly things. Okay, we're doing good on time. I hope you guys enjoyed this part so far. A lot to absorb.